Hi, Wanju. Hello. Welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boolu, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Jesse Vogelaar is a writer and director whose work spans across Australia and Aotearoa, New Zealand. Flitting between the stage where he masters the art of improvisation to advertisements where he transforms the products of Samsung and Specsavers into savvy slices of commercial entertainment, to his growing body of short films, which includes You Lose, a short which Junkie called Australia's greatest work of art, to Room for One More, a tale of a bloke trapped under his collapsed house, calling his mate, asking him to make a short film for him, to the award-winning Accoladia, an absurd comedy about being the best of everything in the world. Jesse's work stands as a way of exploring the complexities of society through an absurd lens, the style of creativity which Jesse dubs imaginative logic, a term that makes complete sense when you let his work wash over you and change your worldview. In the following interview, recorded ahead of Accoladia's appearance at Flickerfest, Jesse talks about his creative process, the way critics or writers like me apply our own logic to absurdist work, the freedom of advertising, and a heck of a lot more. To view some of Jesse's work, visit jessevogelaar.com, and I highly recommend you kick off by watching Room for One More, a brilliantly executed short film that is both absolutely hilarious and quietly moving too. And additionally, if you want to find out more about what we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au where you can listen to other interviews and read reviews and all the kinds of things. We are a completely independent ad-free website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. So if you can and have the means to support us, please visit patreon.com/thecurb.au to support our work from as little as $1 a month. Here's a clip from Room for One More, followed by the interview with Jesse Vogelaar.
Hey, Alex.
Oh, hey, Bruno. It's Alex.
I know.
How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Oh, me? Yeah, so a house actually collapsed on me and now I'm trapped under a beam.
What?
Well, let's start talking about your work, because I kind of want to delve into the brand of comedy that you've created. And I hate using that word brand because it sounds like it's a marketing tool or, you know, a product or something like that. But there is a certain style of comedy that you built up over the years, and I want to kind of explore that throughout your work. But let's go back to the beginning. When you started off wanting to be a creative and wanting to be a filmmaker, what was the initial kind of spark to say, yes, I want to do this. This is what I want to be able to do.
Yeah, I think it's been a continuous progression of just being a kid and playing around with toys. And I think my dad once gave me a broken video camera, like a tape camera. It didn't even work, but I was like pretending to film my toys and just imagining that process. So I think it's been this gradual thing, but around high school, I just wasn't sure if, you know, that was a real thing you can do. You know, my dad is a tradie and my mom had odd jobs, so it was always this more pragmatic upbringing of like getting something safe and secure and making a living. But then I had some great teachers at my high school that just, I think, saw a bit of potential in me and prodded me just enough to keep going with it and just go a little further and a little further. And so I did end up going to film school and just never stopping. I think what my teacher said is like this very Confucian thing, like it doesn't matter how slow you go as long as you don't stop, sort of thing. And I think, yeah, seeing some of my peers do things, it's taken me longer than I would have liked, but I guess that's just life. Everything takes longer than you think it will. And I'm still doing it, so.
Was there a point that you realized that the style of comedy that you work with worked? That there was an audience reception that you were like, yeah, this is it?
Yeah, I suppose that initially it's just making things to make friends laugh or people you know laugh. But the first time I was like, wow, this is actually an audience, was this 2-minute short that was just a very visual montage of this old schoolyard gag with a circle that you punch someone if they look at it. And that just immediately started going viral, like overnight, and there were articles being published and it was put up on Vimeo front page and Nowness and things like that. And yeah, that was the first, I guess, proper nudge into like a more public sense of what it's like to have people see your work and say things about it that you don't expect or interpret it in different ways. It then it's out of your control and it becomes its own thing.
That's you lose, isn't it? And I know that like Junkie had said something along the lines of this is one of the most important pieces of Australian art ever made. Like us writers tend to say stuff like that quite a bit, and we often say it in a way that it doesn't really have a consideration for the impact that it might have on the person who it's being said about. So when you have something like that said about you and your work, what does that do? Like, you read a headline like that, how do you sit there and go, oh no, I've got a benchmark to live up to?
Yeah, well, I mean, I took it as hyperbole. I took it as like, oh, this is, the best coffee I ever had. This is, that kind of thing. But it was tricky because I think even though I wrote it off like that, I still had this niggling thing that, oh, well, the next thing I got to make has got to do the same thing, or it's got to reach the same kind of audience on the same scale, which it didn't, and they didn't. And I was like churning out these little shorts for years and mostly for fun, and they were getting better, but there was this more of a disconnect. And I think there's been multiple times throughout doing what I do where I think I've lost my bearings a little bit. Like I feel like maybe I'm doing this for the wrong reasons, or like approaching this in a way that I think I should approach it, and then finding myself back on track again, going, oh no, this feels natural, this feels right, and this is the thing. And that's a, I think, something that's maybe going to keep happening. Yeah, so it was tricky in a sense to figure out, because at the same time I don't like repeating things, and I think that's maybe detrimental in some ways, because on social media what really works is when you're just consistent and you do this thing and you become known for this thing. But every time I've done anything remotely successful, I feel this temptation to do a 180 and try something new and experiment, almost to prove to myself that, it's not just this lucky thing that I've stumbled upon, but I can keep creating new worlds. Where?
It's this sense of like being active on social media and being a creative person. There is this feel like I've got to have something new every day, just to keep some kind of audience who I don't really know, this faceless audience, excited or entertained, engaged. But then, like your short films, they play in festivals and stuff like that. So there's got to be a disconnect between the social media work and then, trying to create a profile or a body of work that goes out to film festivals and grows and grows and grows that way. Is there a conflict there that you've had to kind of reconcile with?
Yeah, I think early on, even because social media has been such a present thing for at least, I don't know, 15, 10 years or so. And in the beginning, I put pressure on myself that like, oh, maybe I do need to do this thing where it's a weekly or a daily, or be a YouTuber or something like that. But I just couldn't. I couldn't do that. So the things I have put on social media have been these kind of one-off things. And eventually, I think I just accepted that I just wanted to go slower and I just wanted to work on these individual pieces. And film festivals were better for that, I think, where you could just focus for a year on this one thing, create this thing, and then just put it out and watch it grow rather than putting out many things and watching a channel or a platform grow or something like that.
I mean, it's hard. The way that the landscape has been established is makes it really, really hard if you just want to be somebody who's trying to test out ideas or be creative and things like that. Which then brings me, I guess, to one of the shorts, which I absolutely love, which is Room for One More. This concept of connection, right? Of two guys trying to talk with each other, and it's like one's literally had a house fall on him, and they're avoiding talking about the situation, but will do anything about it. When an idea like this comes around in a very absurdist way, what's the initial kernel of writing a script for a film like that?
Yeah, so I mean, it started quite simply. Mario wrote that script, who's in the film, as the guy under the rubble. And it was really a thing of, I'm itching to make something. Should we just do something? And then he sent me this voice memo, which is very similar to the actual recording that you end up hearing in the film itself of like, hey, I have this idea. And we were building on it. But I think what really appealed to me about that concept and doubling down on it was this tragedy. It's like, I don't think the biggest tragedy in that film is that he's trapped under a house or that he's lonely. It's the fact that he wants to make a short film. And that absurd idea of legacy and exceptionalism is something that has always been something that's interested me and something I've wanted to play with and satirize. And I th like what you were saying about connection. I think that's this antithesis to that obsession or that unhealthy relationship with being special or yeah, making something, I think that can kind of sometimes numb us to our senses. And that's what comes through in the film. I think it's that they've just shut off the reality around them and they're in this situation, that frog in boiling water sort of thing.
And I guess for listeners, it's like Mario's still alive, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So part of the reason why I mentioned is it did you ever question, hang on, this guy's sending me a script about getting somebody else to make a short film. Was there this meta realization of what was being requested? Obviously, he didn't send it to you while being trapped underneath a building, but was there ever kind of that self-concept of, am I the person that he's talking about? Is this that kind of thing?
I don't know. I think maybe it's just something we had both felt and connected over. So we'd both been working, creating things for brands and doing that kind of content creation thing for a long time. And I think maybe it was a little voice that was like, oh, I'm suffocating and I want to just express something and break out of that. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that, but I also wonder then, having people like me or audience members trying to find meaning in absurdist comedy, is that something that you welcome? Is it something you push back against? Is the film supposed to be like? Is your work just supposed to be taken as is, or do you want people to try and seek a deeper meaning, or what do you want audiences to take away from the work?
That's a fun question. It reminds me of this moment when we premiered the film at Palm Springs and there was a Q&A after. And I think one of the only questions we got, this woman in the audience was like, why a bat? And I think Mario's response was something like, why anything? And I think the best things that you make are just connected to the gut and come from this intuitive place. I think looking back on it, there is this very macabre Edgar Allan Poe thing to the whole film, with this bat in trapped inside this house and this person has to live with the bat. And that was something that hadn't occurred to us at all until maybe 18 months after it had been on the festival circuit. And so if we could go back to that lady now, I think we could intellectualize and have a sophisticated answer about why there was a bat. But I think a lot of metaphors and symbolism, I think, is just going with the gut and going with what is fun or what feels interesting in the moment. And I think the more I've let go and come from a freer place, the work has been better for it.
Yeah. I mean, you use this term imaginative logic, which I love. And I'm curious if you can talk about that, what it is to apply imaginative logic to the creative process.
Yeah, I guess imaginative logic is kind of an internal set of rules that only make sense within, your own head or a group of people's heads. And a fun challenge for me has always been, how can I let an audience in on this imaginative logic? Logic. And the reason I use the word logic is because there are rules to it. And if you betray those rules, everything just falls flat and becomes less interesting. And strangely, with Room for One More, it feels very, well, this can go in any direction it wants to, but it's still honoring something. And we might not know exactly what that is while we're doing it, but there's are these moments where we go, no, that doesn't feel right, or that wouldn't happen, or this character wouldn't do that, even though they would do all this like outrageous stuff, and they would just forego their own life and everything to make this short film, but it makes perfect sense here and now. And yeah, the goal is just to get the audience in on that inside joke. I think a lot of the time inside jokes can be a barrier or alienate an audience, but if you can find a way to let them in on the inside joke, that's a really good success for me. Success metric. Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about the rules. Like, the audience doesn't need to be aware what the rules are. They just need to know that they're in place for you. And I guess it's that creation of a safety net, right? To be able to put somebody into the space immediately and go, you're going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And I think watching, like, Echolalia, where it is very much immediate what the rules are. You've got one metal detector guy and then immediately another one appears and it's like, oh, okay, this is a competition world, and then we watch that flow out. But I'm curious then about establishing those rules. How do you do that? Is that something that you talk about with the cast and crew, or is it something that you let just kind of sit in the script, or and only you need to know them? How do they apply to the creative process?
I think the rules operate on different levels, I think. And so there is that internal script logic. And that's often rooted in, well, what is really important to these characters and what do they really care about? And that can drive then the narrative sense of things. But then there are also conversations that step outside of the script, like with Michael Lincoln, the DOP. He's got this great narrative mind when it comes to shooting. And we had a great chat about what the the logic of the camera was. Like, what does it mean, and like where are we seeing this from? And we established these two modes where we were either really far out, where everything was in plain sight, and it had this feeling that you're being watched. And there was, I think in every single scene, there was an intern, like a little sash wearing character with a notepad and a pen and a bad wig, just keeping tabs on everything. Even if it was like really hidden in the shadows, they were there. And then the opposite was when we were really, really tight. I don't even remember, maybe 100 mil lens where you could almost feel people breathing on each other. And what you could see in those close-ups was completely different to what you could see in the wides. And I think that comes back to what we were talking about just before, where that connection is the antithesis to the bleakness of the world. And that world logic, they have a secondary logic that's between each other, and that's, yeah, they share this separate language, this separate connection in that mode. So I can't remember what the question was,
No,
but
well, it's about establishing the rules and stuff, but you've answered it in an interesting way, because it is, you're commenting on the world in a way that kind of detaches us from the world but asks us to look at the world as it's operating, right? And that's why I really like Accoladia. It's like this whole competition driven nature of it, and it comes back to the way that social media impacts it, our day-to-day existence. I only got one like on this post, but I put so much work into it, that kind of stuff. And, I love that for want of a better term, an adversary or a friend in the film is this guy who just wants to be a really good mannequin. And it's like the simple things in life, like I just want to be a nice person. Like, that's one of the aspects of it. And this competition way that everything has been turned into a competition, like it's one of these things where we can step aside and look at the world and expose it for what it is, but then we're also able to kind of engage with it in a way that encourages us to laugh about it too. Yeah, it's a real treat is basically what I'm trying to say.
I think what we were looking to get across was that this competition is in direct opposition to them being allowed to be close together and having a friendship and having a connection. Being exceptional is what drives them apart, or having the pressure to be exceptional all the time.
And then the film's now going to be screening in Flicker Fest, so there's like this, extra meta meaning as well. And your films have been in competition processes as well. Was that something that was in your mind as you were working on this particular one, that you are doing these creative outputs and then they go on to be in film festivals where you are in the competition against friends and people you know for awards?
Yeah, it is a strange thing, because they're going to festivals. I'm often with other people who I really love, and I love their work, and like we might go on like a road trip of like three directors in a car going to this city and this festival. And then there is this competitive aspect to it, and it's there whether you like it or not. And that's this strange component to it. It's like, in order to be able to platform films or showcase them, that this seems to be this necessity to distinguish them and tier them and be able to go, oh, this one is approved, or these festivals validate this film, and so it's a legitimate film and a professional film or whatever, and these films don't. And then this then directly feeds into, well, then these opportunities are then allocated to the films that achieve XYZ, or and it might not necessarily be film festivals. There's different ways through it. But yeah, it's I think that was another thing in Acoladia. It was like participating in this game, and like sometimes it feels real and sometimes it doesn't, and just the weird feelings that come up within that system.
Because it's, yeah. I mean, again, as you're saying, like in each of these shots, you've got somebody, this score taker, this adjudicator in the periphery of it, just going, no, yes, no. And the prize in itself is a hamper, right? And again, one of the characters comments, look, I don't have any food or anything. Could you just give me something? And it's like, no, you've got to smile. There is all these layers there, which I think is so pointed about the state of creativity in Australia and the world as a whole. Can you talk about probably that kind of relationship of pointing a finger at going, hey, the whole starving artist concept, it's real. We are still starving artists, and yet this is what I'm creating.
Yeah, I mean, I guess adding to this whole system that we go through, a lot of us, most of the time, are not getting paid or are paying quite a bit of money to even participate in the system, to be eligible for an award or to be considered for a festival, all in the hopes that, if you just follow what you love, the money will come. But I think, yeah, whatever they say, will it? I think it really depends, and it can be really difficult to stay on track when you're constantly coming back to this existential place of like, all right, well, I've done this now. What am I supposed to do next? And supplementing what you do with other things, whether it be with commercials or something that's completely outside of the industry.
I mean, it's interesting you mentioned commercial work because one of the benefits, I guess, of commercials is that the kind of comedy or the absurdist stuff really can be put into a succinct manner, like 30-second, 60-second clip. Do you find that that's also an easy space for creativity or within a boundary, of course, but being able to be creative in a commercial space still lets you kind of explore that style, the Jesse style?
I think so. I've been really fortunate to have the opportunity to make some commercial pieces in my voice and being given a bit of freedom to just play around and work with the actors and who gets casted and things like that. And there's absolutely a lot of craft that goes into this hyper focus on just 30 seconds of time, or it's a six, like how do you make something work in 6 seconds? And yeah, that just I think develops a lot of things in a really complementary way. But again, it also feels quite separate as well. So doing something successfully in the commercial world doesn't necessarily translate to being able to get a film up or a show up, but being able to at least keep being able to stay active and keep that thing in my head sharp is something I'm really grateful for.
Yeah, and I mean, you can tell, like at least from what I've seen, you can tell that you're still kind of furthering what you're being able to do in the creative sense of it, just in a different format. And In a lot of ways, there is this sense then that, while we don't often talk about ads or commercials in the creative sense of being a short film or anything like that, there are certainly ways of that being a justifiable means of an art form in itself, right? And we think of, some of the great ads of all time are things that are really pushing the creative boundary of what it means to be able to be a commercial filmmaker in a way. Do you see commercial work as being a creative endeavor? Is that like an artistic format at all?
I think it's definitely a challenge, and it's not easy to be able to execute a great idea in such a short amount of time. But yeah, it also just depends on the collaboration and the agency you're working with or the production company you're working with. And I think also for crew, this is something that just keeps people in the business and keeps them around, or, upcoming cinematographers or production designers, allowing them to just keep developing their thing as well. So it's kind of like this great communal thing where you want to get the people who worked on this short film onto a commercial, so that like you can just keep things as sustainable as possible and keep, yeah, so that people don't get left behind. But I think there is totally its own art form in the short form space. And I think just thinking super visually and how do I get as much across or build momentum without trying to telegraph or say things too much is great. And I think maybe that's something like I've struggled with longer form more than the shorter forms. Like I'm not a particularly talkative person, so when someone asks me a question, I say the answer in the shortest way possible, and I often feel like it's too short, but I think in commercials it's helped me out.
So, which is a good way of kind of, as we lead into wrapping up, what's your future then? I am a strong advocate for short films. I think there is it's, a justifiable format of creativity and filmmaking. Like, they are still films and they need to be treated, in the same conversation as The Brutalist, like this 3.5 hour film needs to be in the same conversation as a 2 minute film, right? They are just as valuable. But the step towards features is always an expected one. Do you feel that pressure to then make a feature, or are you happy kind of bubbling away in the short form?
Yeah, the pressure is absolutely there. And it's also such a wild leap that going from making a short to the whole world of financing a film, like Acoladia, for instance, there is a feature script and it's quite ambitious and expensive to make. And so then it's this thing where you think, well, what am I going to do in the meantime? Because I'm just itching to make stuff and keep going. And like I have made another short film that we haven't announced anywhere yet, with another writer, that we'll hope to do something with this year. And I love shorts, and being on the circuit has just allowed me to watch just hundreds and hundreds of shorts that I admire and study. And I think while making the last couple of shorts, I just became obsessed with watching them and learning from shorts specifically, which I think a lot of people might come into shorts having only really seen features and applying the same narrative structure or logic in making a feature to a short, but making them succinct and their own standalone thing is so challenging. And I think it's even more competitive. There are so many people making shorts and they're getting so good. Even just in Australia, the amount of amazing shorts that are coming out every year, it's actually wild. But I think I've always felt like I need to be the best short filmmaker I can before I can give myself the permission to take the leap and take other people's money and do something in a feature length format. But yeah, there are more shorts on the horizon.
Well, that's
It's not
good.
a plan.
I'm also interested to see what the, feature will look like. But I mean, I love the short format again. I think it's really wonderful. But you talk about the competitive nature or the vibrant scene that is existing in Australia, and it's wonderful to see. But I imagine it's a lot of it is because of the notion that you make a really great short film, therefore the feature will come and the funding bodies want to see that and all this kind of stuff. And we don't have to unpack that, but it's just that kind of progression step of shorts are where you test out ideas and then features are where you actually bring the idea to life. But like I don't think I could see a feature or something like Room for One More, for example, right? It's a beautiful short film as it is because it's that the brevity of it really plays into the concept of this last conversation that people are having on the phone. And I'm curious then, like kind of as a last question in a way, embracing that short form and making sure that the story stays contained in that particular area, is that a difficulty? Is it hard to kind of not keep the story contained to the 8, 10, 15 minute kind of section that you've sectioned off for it in that way?
I think what helped us with Room for One More is that we had absolutely no expectations. There was no strategy or a pathway. We're kind of scrambling a little bit to figure out, like, well, what could we maybe do with that thing we've discovered in Room for One More in a bigger scale? But it was literally a voice memo, and I was like, yeah, let's do that. And maybe that earnestness or that naivety is what is likable about it. I think for me and Mario, we both met through improv comedy, short form improv. So it's about coming into a scene as late as possible and, exiting it well before it starts to die. And that brevity is something to our strengths. But then with Accoladia, I did have the feature in mind. And so, yes, it was a challenge. And it was longer than I expected it to be. And it was really hard to contain all of these ideas and all of this logic and this world into a short form. And so I've tinkered with both modes of thinking in the short form format. And it is tricky. As far as festivals go, it's a lot more worth it if you can make it. And I think most of the value is when you can attend. And so, yeah, with Room for One More, we went to so many different places, including Flickr Fest. And also one of the great things about Flickr Fest is they do this tour where it gets to reach this widest possible audience in Australia. And I think, I don't know if this is intentional, but it seems the comedy shorts happen more often in the more rural areas where I think the light-hearted kind of short film is more appreciated. But yeah, it's been really good. I think I was at Flickerfest the last couple of years. And they also did the TVC competition where I did that Specsavers commercial that really, I think, activated an interest in the kind of commercials I could make. And since then, the type of commercial work I've been getting has been really exciting. So yeah.
That's good. I'm glad. Well, I've really enjoyed being able to finally catch up and talk about your work. I'm excited to see where you go, what you do. It's, yeah, your view of the world and the comedy that you bring to it. Not that you always have to work in the comedy space, but it's refreshing. It's nice to see. And I really enjoyed being able to sit with it and let it kind of change the way that I see the world as well, which is always a nice thing when you're watching a film, because it's getting that experience to go, oh yeah, right, maybe this. So yeah, thank you, Jesse, I appreciate it.
Thank you. That really means a lot to me to hear you took that away from my work.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole like avenue of being able to talk about how we carry films forward and stuff, but I think that's usually something I tend to do on a personal level with myself, of going, all right, how am I carrying this film forward? How am I remembering it? And it's interesting, I had a conversation with somebody last night about end of year lists, and they are kind of redundant in some capacity, but about building up an end of year list and how we sit at the end of the year and reflect on what we've watched and what we've experienced, and then letting the kind of the memories of certain things rise to the top of our mind and then go, oh yeah, this did actually leave a mark, right? And for me, like, not to make this all about me, but there were some films where I watched last year as I was doing my list where I'm like, oh, I really actually resonated with that a lot more after I saw the film than I did. I'm not saying that I felt that about your films. I really enjoyed them, but I'm just saying that they can have an unexpected impact down the line, where you kind of sit there and you go, oh, 6 months down the line, I don't understand why I'm thinking about this, but clearly my mind wants me to remember this particular thing. And then you're sitting there and you're going, oh, actually, now I understand why I'm thinking about it, because it reflects on the moment that I'm currently in and stuff like that. Again, it's a very personal thing, which I'm just kind of vomiting words at, but it's something that I think about quite a bit, because it's why we watch movies, right? We want that kind of personal thing to give us that, or at least I do, at least. But I find it fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's something I've always taken as a compass for the things that I'd like to make. It's not necessarily the films that are like, wow, this is like fantastic the moment the credits roll, but it's often these films that you might have been feeling mixed about or maybe not even liked that much, but then a year or two later, you get a pang of like, actually, there was something to that that was really special that I haven't seen anywhere else, and I think I should revisit that.
Hey, thanks for listening to this chat with Jesse Vogelaar. Check out his work on jessevogelaar.com. And once again, I recommend you check out Room for One More. It's a brilliant short. And keep a lookout for Accoladia as well, as it goes around the festival circuit. It's a wonderful, wonderful short film to lose yourself with. For everything else related to The Curb, visit thecurb.com.au. I'll see you in the next one.